Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is presented by Iron Jock and Wisconsin.Golf's Shirts of Summer. There are two constants of a Wisconsin summer, heat and humidity. Iron Jock tackles them both with its advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. With Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here on a Monday recording the Talking.Golf podcast that should have been on your website last weekend, but Gary and I coming off the thrill of the playoff at the Wisconsin State Open, I fly back to Arizona. We hop in a car, my wife and I, and we drive to Rancho Mirage, California for LPGA Tour qualifying school, where Gary D'Amato, my Iron Jock shirt, I needed about three of them. Actually, probably needed about six of them because I would sweat through one with one wave, and then I could have sweat through another with another wave. It was hot and sticky in the desert. Not used to that. I've been to this LPGA Q school before, and the dry heat's fine, but you throw in some humidity, and my goodness, it was truly a survival test for the young women that were trying to secure a pass to stage two. I'm spent, my friend.
Yeah. You had a long 10-day stress there, Rob, plus plane flights and all that stuff included. And you went from, 75 degrees and very pleasant weather at the State Open to 35, 40 degrees hotter than that down in California. That's just, I know you're used to the heat in Arizona, Rob, but that had to be ridiculous.
It was, but you bring up a good point. We had great weather for the State Open. We often knock Mother Nature in Wisconsin, but we got to give a shout out that was some of the best weather without interruption that we've been at all year, maybe in a couple years. That was Chamber of Commerce stuff up there in Mequon.
It was, yeah, 75 and sunny every day. Plenty of shade on the course and a light breeze, what kept you cool, and no rain the entire week. So it was perfect.
But we still wore the Iron Jock shirts proudly there. I wore them proudly on Saturday. And then the two Wisconsin Tech golf shirts. I don't even want to describe how sweaty it was yesterday. We talk about all the stuff that, has now been invented for people to deal with the heat. But, I saw a lot of those sleeves that people are wearing. One gal had sleeves with a vest over the sleeves, which, again, you're trying to get warm to stay warm. And then, hopefully the body regulates. And then a lot of face coverings where the towel was right over the face. And, we've got just in our stock now, this gaiter that you can get wet and keep cool, but it was like a veil but yet you could tell they were, they kept wetting it and wearing it. And, a lot of extremes when you got to play, golf in the desert heat, but you've got 308 women trying to get through first stage, Gary. There aren't many courses or collections of courses you can have in one area that'll host that thing. And in August in the Palm Springs area, it's the perfect setup.
Yeah, nobody else wants to play golf at that time. I'm looking at your pictures on Wisconsin.Golf, Rob, and first of all, the sleeves you talk about, I noticed that Bobby and Steve were both wearing them. But secondly, I would say the picture of Steve that's on our website right now, it still looks like he's needs to gain some weight. He looks awfully skinny still.
Well, I bet that's a good point. He probably lost a lot of weight this week too, but yeah. The one thing that both Steve and I shared was that, we were both complaining about the humidity before the rounds even started. And I saw him yesterday go up to, fill up the water thing and at the ice machine. And, just from standing at the range and watching Bobby warm up, I mean, his back was soaked. My back was soaked. I mean, it was just, it was relentless humidity. And yeah, that's a good point. And of course, this is the time a year ago where, you know, we went from the peace and tranquility of, you know, him caddying for Bobby at the LPGA Q school to then the buzz about the Ryder Cup, and then, you know, the victorious U.S. side that he captained at Whistling Straits, to then his health problems. So, you know, you just hope that, you know, he continues to watch all that. He looked great. He was, you know, same old Steve Stricker. And now this week, Steve and Bobby both on their way to the Allied Challenge over at Grand Blanc, Michigan, where for this week's senior tour event, where they'll Steve will be in the field with Nicky on the bag, Mario Tiziani in on a sponsor's exemption. Bobby Stricker will be caddying for Mario, Jerry Kelly in the field. And then when I called up, I was pleasantly surprised, because we weren't sure leaving the state open last week that Skip Kendall would be in the field, but he was going over there to do some teaching, and now Skip in the field on a sponsor's exemption. So we've got the band back together this week over at the Ally Challenge in Michigan.
Paging JP Hayes, paging JP Hayes. Come on, JP, get out there on the Champions Tour.
That's right. So he could get there. He's a pilot. So, you know, if there was a way, I'm sure it'd be good, but he's obviously quite content, yeah, you know, doing what he's doing now down in Texas. So,
yeah.
But let's start first, Gary, with the LPGA Tour Q School, and work our way back to the State Open, because both were great, great competitions. And again, we've marveled for a long, long time at this meteoric rise of Bobby Stricker, from a high school tennis player to now a young lady who was tied for low American on the at the LPGA first stage qualifying out of 308 golfers. And Gary, I saw golf bags, just from memory, University of Georgia, South Carolina, Stanford, Arizona, Arizona State, Oregon State, just to name a few. And I'm sure there were dozens of universities, and we're talking Power Fives represented there. And she, from the University of Wisconsin, was the low American in that bunch. I'm stunned at what I saw. And I told her, you probably, you know, talking to Dennis Tiziani for all the years that you have, you probably heard him when he talks about certain guys he's working with that are trying to play professional golf, and certain, back when he was coaching, those guys that would leave UW after they graduate and try to play the mini tours, they either have the shots or they don't have the shots. That was his phrase. If you know, he's got all the shots. Okay, now it's a matter of trying to execute that. Bobby has all the shots, and this week she totally executed all 4 days.
Yeah, Rob, it is. It's an amazing story. You know, to go from not playing high school golf to walking on at Wisconsin to a few years later, as you mentioned, being low American in the qualifier, just incredible. Now, obviously she has good genes to begin with. She has great teaching. She's surrounded by people in her family who are, you know, it's a golf-centric family. The it's a winning culture in golf, too. I mean, all those Tizianis and Steve, of course, they've all won a lot of tournaments. I'd like to sit down and figure out and add up everything that Nikki, Steve, Dennis, Larry, Mario, you know, what they've all won. It's got to be 100 tournaments. So,
and then you throw in, I believe it was Dennis and Larry's sister, Mary Tiziani from Hurley.
Yeah.
Who, you know, was very dominant on the women's scene, you know, when I first started covering golf. And, you know, it is great. And then the impact that especially Dennis and Larry have still on the junior golf scene, the college golf scene. Emily Lauterbach, you know, hasn't had a lesson in about a year with Larry Tiziani, but went back to see him a few weeks ago just to kind of get, just to hear him talk. When those guys talk, you listen, and you know, they have as much to say about managing your game as it is, you know, the mechanics of your game. And so you're right. I mean, the reach of the Tiziani family tree is far and wide. And you know, Bobby now is the latest example. And Izzy's off to a great start in her high school season at Wanakee. You know, they get it. They understand what you know, grandpa, dad, whoever, Uncle Mario might be telling them if they're, you know, asking each other for advice. And it was amazing to watch. You know, I started out with Bobby Stricker and saw her birdie the first hole. And then I guess she made eight pars after that on the front nine. And then I followed Emily Lauterbach, saw her make two birdies, went over and watched Tess Hackworthy for a while, and then caught back up with Bobby on the hole where she flies the green on her approach shot on 14 or 15. and is in a back bunker, chips, chunks and runs it down to about 4 or 5 feet, and she misses the putt on the high side, and that's her first bogey. And then she comes back and makes a birdie on the next hole, sticks it to about 5 feet or no, 12 feet, and then rolls it in. And it just, you know, that mentality where you're not going to let a bogey impact you is something that is night and day different from a year ago when she shot, I think it was 79 in the final round after getting through the first 54 holes. You know, it got her some conditional status on the Epson Tour, but she only made one start. So this is huge for her to get through.
It is, and it's gotten to the point now where the Bobby Stricker story is going national. I mean, for a while, you know, we've certainly covered her for many years, and it was sort of a local regional story. But now that she's having this level of success, it's going to become, if it hasn't already, a national story. Rob, I was on a Golf Writers Association of America board meeting Zoom call last week. And Beth Ann Nichols, who covers women's golf and does a fantastic job of it for Golf Week, was talking about Bobby. So, you know that there's a lot of people, a lot of national people now starting to get really interested in the story. It's going to be cool to see how Bobby and Steve handle this going forward.
Yeah, well, and that's a good point, because I was going, and the video with Steve that we posted with the story, just asked him a couple questions about, you know, the weekend. First of all, one thing he said was he felt that Bobby's tennis background really helps her on the golf course, especially because she played doubles in high school. And a lot of times her partner relied on her to execute the key shot at the right time. And that part is a carryover to golf. But this going to second stage in mid-October really, you know, creates some situations here. I was kind of going over the schedule. You know, we got the Schwab Cup playoffs coming up on the PGA Tour Champions that Steve has vowed he's going to do this year. And then, like I said, Izzy back playing for Wanakee, and, you know, Wanakee's had a great run with Izzy and Jordan Shipshock, at the 1 and 2 positions. And they're, you know, again, off, they've got a really good, you know, deep team this year. And they could be in the hunt for hardware at the state tournament. And now you've got Bobby doing this. And then Steve said, Rob, you left out one important thing. Deer hunting.
Yeah.
So he's going back in the woods. So, and I think by the time deer hunting rolls around that they're going to be ready for a break again. But, this is all, he said, it's all exciting stuff and it's all good stuff. And now the neat thing, Gary, is that second stage is in Venice, Florida. And I think it's the Plantation Golf and Country Club or something, the Bobcat and the Panther course. But Bobby really looking forward to that, because they've spent the last couple of winters down in Florida and it's become their second home. She's very familiar with the grasses down there, which is a big issue. And so, she's really excited for what lies ahead, but she's all focused on caddying for Mario this week at the Ally. And then it's her birthday on the 30th. You and I remember when she was born, because she was born during the week of the Greater Milwaukee Open back in 1998. Boy, we're old.
Yeah, incredible, Rob. It's going to be such a fun story to follow. And on top of everything that you already mentioned, I mean, Steve has a legitimate chance to be the Champions Tour Player of the Year. I mean, you know, he's got to win again and maybe win a couple times. And Jerry's in that conversation too. So it's going to be a great September and October going forward here for us.
It is, and it's going to be. It's amazing how the golf universe lines up, because when I got back last night, was writing the story. I was watching the replay of the Dick's Sporting Goods Open, and Padraig Harrington won that going away, and so he's now number two in the Schwab Cup standings, and Jerry Kelly's up there, took this last week off to recharge. And Steve's right there too. And of course, Steve and Padraig with that, you know, Ryder Cup captaincy rivalry they've got going. It's just going to be a fun, you know, end of the season here on locally and nationally with Wisconsin golfers.
I keep thinking, you know, as I look at, as we get through last year's stuff, for instance, I keep thinking how can next year top what we saw this year, speaking of last year's tournaments. And I think this year is top last year, and next year we've got a senior open, and it's not stop.
And to, you know, put a bow on the LPGA Tour Q School, we should mention too that equally as impressive as Bobby Stricker was Emily Lauterbach, who a year ago entered the LPGA Epson Tour Q School simply to bridge a gap between the Brown Deer Women's Amateur and the start of the college season and give herself something competitive to play in and to get a taste for what this was like. Totally made the most of it. And she shoots, you know, some terrific rounds of 70, 69, 70, and 72. Both Emily and Bobby had rounds of 72 where it felt like a grind. And yesterday, Gary, Emily, after I left her following her second birdie, never hit another fairway and still shot 72. So, and Emily is, you know, a strong young lady who can hit the ball a long way. And you know, so when she misses a fairway, it's not just, you know, a few yards into the rough. And the only way you can get in trouble out at Mission Hills Country Club is to miss it behind all the palm trees, then have to hit through all of them to get back in position. So she was really scrambling at times. She chipped in for a birdie on the back nine to keep, the momentum going. And I think, you know, she's got one more year left at UW. And now her juggling act, Gary, is so she goes from the first stage of Q School and the Q School prep that they did with the East Coast Women's Pro Tour that Bobby's been playing on. So 2 weeks in the desert to now, she said, 8 rounds of qualifying for the Badgers this fall to see, you know, to get the lineup form for their first match in South Carolina. I believe it's the 14th, 15th of September. So that's a lot of golf. And then, you know, back to the Q School for the second stage so she can have, you know, secure status next summer when she graduates and can start playing professionally. So, that's exciting too. I think Emily's got, we saw her win the state women's open in a playoff over Bobby Stricker this summer at Green Lake. And again, it's been a while since we have this much excitement on the women's side. We've got Casey Danielson out there. We've had Alyssa Farrell out playing and Brooke Farrell for a while. And now it's just kind of, the floodgates have opened and I think Emily Lauterbach's got a huge, huge ceiling as far as where she can take her talents at the professional level.
She does, Rob. I agree. She's got length. She's got something you can't buy, and that's club head speed. She hits it a long way. And talk about feeling like we're getting old, Rob. You know, I remember covering for the Journal Sentinel, Jessica Geiser and Emily Lauterbach, I think, might have qualified for the very first drive, chip, and putt at Augusta National.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was a big story back then because it was just starting and, juniors were going to be able to walk on the grounds at Augusta National. And here we are all these years later, and it's crazy how time has flown and how those women – we haven't talked about Jessica Geiser, but how they both have developed. It's crazy.
Well, and with Emily, you know, she was kind of a late starter in junior golf because, her sister Claire was, played a lot of junior tournaments when my kids were coming through. And so I recognized Claire's name, her older sister, a lot. And then, Emily started playing. She played in a couple of the futures things that our kids were playing in. And, the results weren't there right away. But, boy, she stuck with it. She's a very intelligent young lady and a very patient young lady. And in my opinion, I don't know if she would agree, but she certainly is taking her game every bit as far as Bobby Stricker in what by today's junior golf standards would be a very, very short period of time. And I think, Gary, it speaks to the idea that if you're raising a kid and you're currently traveling all over the country trying to get noticed, you might want to consider dialing it back a little bit and letting that kid breathe. And sometimes in junior golf, less is more. And we've seen that with a lot of kids who have gotten where they want to go. And it's hard because everybody else, you're looking to see what everybody's playing in and how much they're playing. And you want to keep up with the Joneses. You know, these are two young ladies who are a great shining example of less is more. Bobby waited until the right time for her to play. And then she jumped into it, and she's got a lot of, I use this. She's a low mileage golfer. If you hear me ever call somebody a high mileage golfer, it also implies that there might be a degree of burnout that has to be at least explained or overcome. But a low mileage golfer has a lot left in the tank and their best years are ahead of them. No doubts. And that's what we're seeing here with Lauterbach and with Stricker.
Yeah. And to put a bow on it, Rob, I would urge our listeners to go to wisconsin.gov and read your excellent coverage from over the weekend of Emily and Bobby and Tatum and Tess too. But yeah, you did a great job. Rob, you're a fine photographer too. I loved your photos.
Well, and that was the other part of the equation there, Gary. By Saturday and Sunday, you know, I was wearing contacts with sunglasses, and the sweat was pouring into my eyes. I couldn't even see 3 feet in front of me. I just hope this stuff turns out. And it was so bright, and only Jim Kelch could appreciate the fact that. And I didn't have as good lens that I was using at the State Open, which basically does the work for me. And this lens does the same thing, but you know, it needs a little more work. But boy, there's no shade there, it's all bright light. And I was riding home, my wife was driving, and I was doing the photos in the car. I was surprised, and you know, the backdrops of golf in Palm Springs are so dramatic, with palm trees and mountains. It really is different than any other photos that we have. And now next year, Gary, maybe we got to get you and Jim to come out for that senior tour event in March out there. And Steve Stricker said that if he wins the new PGA Tour Champions event that'll be played at Mission Hills, he will jump in the pond, Poppy's pond.
That's something I would pay to see. That would be fun.
So so the week ends with the LPGA Tour Q School, the Epson Tour Q School. But it began, and this is what's staggering. I couldn't wait to talk about the State Open. And now we get upstaged somewhat by the LPGA. But welcome to our world. There's always another story looming around the corner. But to go back to the State Open at Ozaukee Country Club in Mequon, once again, another classic. Daniel Mazziota of Wisconsin Rapids, a caddy at Sand Valley, a former web.com, or I should say Korn Ferry Tour player who won twice on PGA Tour Latino America, wins in a three-hole playoff for Hunter Eichhorn, who shoots 62 in the morning round of the 36-hole finale. Gary, where do we even begin to break down the State Open? It was just great story after great story. Let's start with the playoff and the winner, a caddy from Sand Valley. They've been a huge presence in Wisconsin golf here the last 5 or 6 years, and now we have one that's a State Open champion.
Yeah, he's got a really cool backstory, Rob. You know, in talking with him over the couple of days when he got in contention, we talked to him after every round. And, you know, here's a guy who's caddying up at Sand Valley, but he's played, you know, sort of the PGA Tour. He's played everywhere. He has quite a resume. Won a couple times on PGA Tour Latino America. Won the Tour Championship, I think it was 2015, maybe. He's been here, there, and everywhere, Rob. And this was validation for him that he wants to get back take another stab at the tour, Korn Ferry Tour qualifying, I'm sure specifically, but this is going to go a long way, you know, not only the money, the 12 grand, which helps a lot, but just what it did for his confidence to show that he can, you know, he can still get it done. And Hunter Eichhorn put up a great, great fight with that 62 in the morning round on the final day, and then didn't quite have his A game in the afternoon, but had enough to get into a playoff. And boy, Rob, it was something else. We finished right before dark. They couldn't have played another hole, I don't think.
No, and it was fun getting to know Daniel Mazziota, and of course, me being from Wisconsin Rapids, I was intrigued by the fact that, and really, honestly, Gary, the reaction on social media to his victory. JT Thompson, the head pro at Bullseye Country Club in Wisconsin Rapids, where Daniel goes to play a lot of his golf when they can't get on or can't play at Sand Valley. He's a member there. He got a membership to work on his game. Really loves the Bullseye and the Northwoods feel, the tree-lined fairways along the Wisconsin River. But JT Thompson said that he's a very popular figure around Bullseye and has brought a lot to the club. And I think, you know, there was a day, Gary, where there was a lot of, you know, I guess, rumbling, whatever you want to call it, about, you know, whether a golfer in the State Open field, if they weren't truly from Wisconsin, you know, was a Wisconsin golfer. And I think, in my opinion, without question, the caddies at Sand Valley have brought a perspective to golf that is good, not only from a competitive standpoint, but if you're a young golfer that gets paired with a caddy from Sand Valley and you don't have a direction mapped out in your life, every caddy we've talked to, Gary, from Sand Valley, Charlie Delsman, Adam Miller, they've now been there 6, 7, 8 years. And Charlie, you know, started out at Erin Hills. So part of his tenure, you know, started down there. But I mean, these are good jobs that are really, you know, providing people with a desire to stay in golf with that opportunity. And, you know, it also makes them better golfers. We've seen it. And it's just amazing to see, you know, how many people from different walks of golfing life wind up at Sand Valley. And, you know, in addition to the Kaisers, you know, giving us, you know, some great courses, we're at three and counting, and with two more on the way and more beyond that, as you outlined in previous Talking Dot Golfs, I just think that they're a great addition to the landscape of golf in Wisconsin.
Yeah, the caddying helps them and competing with other caddies when they're done working. That really sharpens their game too, because they're playing for their own money there. They're not playing for a prize purse. They're playing for what's in their wallet. So that makes you tougher, makes you hungrier. And what a testament to, you know, that Daniel Mazziota gave to Wisconsin golf when he said, you know, both in the trophy ceremony and then to us, he talked about Wisconsin is the best place in the nation, he thinks, to work on your game in the summertime because of the quality and the affordability of the golf in our state. And here's a guy who's played everywhere and he loves Wisconsin golf. He said he's adopted that state as sort of his second, you know, guy born in Florida and spends a lot of his time in California, but loves Wisconsin golf. And it's pretty cool that people who come to our state recognize what's here.
Gary, on the topic of Hunter Eichhorn, the 62, I think showed, you know, what a great future he's got. And, you know, obviously the course set up in the afternoon was much more difficult than the morning. Daniel Mazziota, you know, had a 65 in the morning. Cameron Huss, a 66. You know, we sometimes, you know, don't take the time to look at that third round of the 36 hole finale. Heck, Skip Kendall had a 67 in that third round to get in the conversation, and then started off great in the afternoon. And he was, you know, T3 right behind the two guys battling it out most of the day. But let's go to Hunter Eichhorn. I mean, I think it speaks well. He turned professional earlier this summer, didn't do the Canadian Tour qualifying school during his senior season like Harrison Ott and Thomas Longbella and some of those guys did. But you know, is going to go through the Korn Ferry, you know, Q school here coming up. I think, you know, Hunter showed that he's ready. I mean, there's no question about it. It's too bad the final round didn't work out. It became a battle of attrition, basically, you know, last man standing and you know, playing in the darkness at the end of a long week. But boy, really impressed with what we saw from Hunter Eichhorn. He was the guy that everyone thought would be there at the end. He was. He just didn't win the playoff.
Yeah, and Rob, once he figures out his driver, he's going to be even better. He didn't hit a single driver on the final day, 36 holes. And, you know, he hit his three wood. The course was short enough that he could play it with a three wood. And he got in trouble quite a bit in the afternoon round with his three wood. So that's one aspect of his game he's going to have to work on here, is just straightening out his three wood and especially his driver, because he is going to need his driver, Rob. He didn't need it at the State Open, but of course he's going to need it when he gets to 7,500 yard courses. So once he figures that out, Rob, I think there's going to be no stopping him.
And credit to the WPGA, you know, their course setups, the cream inevitably rises. And as it relates this week, you know, Cameron Huss was low amateur, the Badger golfer from Kenosha, 73, 68, 66, 70. Kind of again, a quiet week, but it's been a quiet summer for Cameron Huss, but a very good summer. He's been in the hunt everywhere and now has a third place finish at the State Open. I think he's probably that guy in waiting that will be the next Hunter Eichhorn as he makes that transition. I believe this is his junior year or is this his senior year at UW with the potential for an additional COVID year. And you know, I think he's got that, you know, that bright future as well.
He does. I think it's his junior year and he, you know, here's another guy similar to Hunter, grew up playing mostly public golf courses down in Kenosha County, didn't really have a swing coach, you know, did it basically on his own. And so he's following his, of course it wasn't as remote in Kenosha County as it is in the UP. And he had access to better courses probably than Hunter did, but similar story. And I'm impressed with Cameron. He's a very mature young man. You know, listening to him talk, you'd think he was 30 years old instead of 20 or whatever he is. And you're right, he has a very bright future. I know he really wants to win a State Am or a State Open and get one under his belt. He's been close, you know, in three or four of them now. And, you know, next summer, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he won one of them, maybe two of them.
And while we're talking about Badgers, his teammate who committed to a bunch of tournaments in Wisconsin, Graham Moody, out of Vancouver, Washington. I got to meet Graham a year ago at, I believe it was the Balance and Believe Invitational at Blackhawk Country Club. And, Graham was fighting consistency a year ago. This year, he finished in the top 10 at the Ray Fisher. I believe it was a T2 there, a T10 at the State Amateur at Sand Valley, and now a T5 this week. I saw him make the best putt of the tournament. You know, Mike Bilowski made a 12-footer down the ridge, number 9 at Ozaukee. And we can talk all day about the hole locations and those greens at Ozaukee. But then Graham comes along and makes about a 40-footer. And it was one that was going to be probably back down to the tee box if it didn't hit the hole. And I'm really impressed with Graham Moody. And the last time we've had two Badger golfers in the top 10 of the Player of the Year standings in the state of Wisconsin was, I believe, 2015 with Matt Ross and Eddie Wada. And it's been a long time. And I know that Mike Wilson has set up this roster. I understand it's going to be a 13-man roster, maybe going to 12, but all 12 are guys that can compete, and no position on the roster is safe. He has created this culture and this, going into the 2022-23 season where you've got to earn your spot, and these guys started embracing that this summer, and we're seeing it with the results, and especially at the State Open with the way that Cam Huss and Graham Moody played.
Yeah, Wisconsin's going to have going to be really strong at the top of its lineup, Rob. And if Mike Wilson can harness that, that competition on the bottom and find a fourth and a fifth golfer, Wisconsin's going to be tough. They made big strides, I think, last year and had a good finish in the Big Ten after finishing last, I think, the previous 2 years. So I think the future is bright, and a little depth will go a long way for that program. But certainly their top two players are going to be very, very good.
And last point on the State Open, the mini tour presence, Austin Kanzorski and Kaylor Steger, fourth and T5 respectively. And then Zach Burry at a T5 as well. And then one other guy that got in the T5 position was Jordan Niebrugge, who it was great to see Jordan back playing in a state event again. And I thought that, he brought a certain, air to the tournament that hadn't been there, in a while. Not that these other guys don't bring that, but Jordan with his resume in college at Oklahoma State, again, he's a guy that I think a lot of people can look up to and do look up to. We looked up to him, Gary, initially because he was so good, so young. Now we're looking up to him because he's fighting to get out there and stay out there. And it hasn't come easy. It wasn't easy this week. He was 67, 71, 68, right there on the doorstep going in that final round in the final group and shoot 73 and just couldn't get really any opportunities to put up a good number.
Yeah, he did not have many good birdie looks. He hit it a little bit crooked. He was in the rough quite a bit in that final round. Hits it a long way, Rob. He's got all the power in the world and speed. But, again, he's got to straighten out his driver a little bit. But you like what you saw from him. I really expected him to be there, and he was certainly. He had a chance to win in the final round. If he shoots 68 in the final round, he wins. He shot 73, so he finished four or five back. But I think this was a good step for him, and hopefully he goes into the fall here and Korn Ferry Tour qualifying with some momentum and some confidence from this.
We talked on our Talking Dot Golf preview of the State Open about all the golfers that weren't there, the four guys playing on the PGA Tour Canada that were exempt that could have been in the field, the three guys with the U.S. Amateur could have been there and weren't because they obviously had the U.S. Amateur. But, we go all the way down. I mean, for a while there, Peter Webb was in the hunt through two or three rounds and showed great promise of, but just had a tough finish, 75-76 in the Wednesday finale. But then two guys that, kind of were in the background, Patrick Stolpe finished T13, final round 74, and then Sam Anderson came on with guns a-blazing on that final round of the 67. I wanted to mention those two, Gary, because we found out that both Patrick Stolpe and Sam Anderson are going to take a rather interesting route. Pat Stolpe not doing, I don't believe, any Korn Ferry Tour qualifying, but Sam Anderson is on the way to the first stage of Korn Ferry Tour qualifying, is with Patrick Stolpe. They're going to do DP World Tour qualifying school, which I just find amazing at this stage, you know, where you, you know, the world is so small that we can get to England for Sam Anderson, Portugal for Patrick Stolpe for the first stage of a three-stage qualifying school. But there's a lot of opportunity there now, especially with LIV Golf. I think maybe pilfering more of the guys on that side of the pond than our side. But, you know, either way, there's a lot of opportunity for young golfers right now to, you know, fill whatever voids may exist in the short term or even the long term with the changing landscape of professional golf.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, but didn't Dan Woltman also do that, went over to Europe and qualified for what was then the European Tour, right?
Correct. But at that point, it was before all these tours. I believe the web.com was the only tour under the PGA Tour umbrella at the start when he did that. And so that was, you know, that was at that point a leap of faith. But he got better because of it, saw different courses, learned to travel on his own, all that, you know, kind of stuff. And it was harder to get there. So correct, you know, and we've had other people that have done that as well, but only in a spot basis. I don't remember, you know, with the current setup and, you know, with being able to have Canadian Tour, PGA Tour, Latino America, and Corn Ferry Tour all, you know, kind of in your backyard, at least the qualifying schools, you know, anybody going over there since then. And so I was surprised, but not surprised, because, you know, Patrick Stolpe has wanted to do this for a couple of years. COVID got in the way, but he's a guy who's, you know, doesn't mind seeing the world. And now the same with Sam Anderson, coming off of a great run at PGA Tour Latino America during the spring months, and then right up to the Tour Championship with a couple of top five finishes, you know, and you know, is a guy that's got a lot of talent. And you know, we can watch the DP World Tour on the Golf Channel just as easily as we can the PGA Tour events. And who knows, maybe we'll see those guys on our early morning broadcasts here in 2023.
Yeah, that'd be cool. It'd be great if they got some status on that tour. Even the Challenge Tour. I'm not sure how the qualifying works, but the Challenge Tours in Europe, what the Corn Ferry is in the United States. And I don't know how the qualifying works in Europe, but if they got any kind of status, it'd be pretty cool to follow them over there in Europe.
Absolutely. And I think that the, you know, and Casey Danielson is another one who was able to, you know, kind of leverage the Ladies European Tour into some confidence to get to where she's at this point with the LPGA Tour. So, it's great that there are these opportunities for the young golfers, and I can't wait to see how those two guys, you know, fare over there. But Gary, any other final impressions from the State Open? We are supposed to go to Century World next year and Minocqua Country Club in 2024. And I'll leave you with something I heard at the LPGA Tour Q School. A certain former Ryder Cup captain came out of the scoring area on day one, when I was there on Friday, and happened to ask me, clearly he followed the coverage of the State Open on Wisconsin.golf, because he asked about the winner and he asked about, you know, how it was. But he also asked, where's next year's State Open? And I said, well, it's at Century World, the, you know, 5 weeks after you might be playing in the U.S. Senior Open. And then I said, and then 2024, and I said, currently that's the way it's set up, because we had heard that they were going to flip-flop with Minocqua Country Club in 24. But right now, Century World in 23, Minocqua Country Club in 24. One Steve Stricker, very intrigued that the State Open is going to his second home course up in Minocqua at Minocqua Country Club in a couple of years. He did say he would like to try to win a sixth State Open and move one victory past Bob Brew, Manuel De La Torre, and Francis Gaillet, and have that record all to himself. So who knows? We may see even more people that we haven't seen in a while at the State Open.
That's pretty cool that Steve would even consider that. You know, obviously he would have had chances over the last, I can't remember the last time he played in one. It was during his early in his PGA Tour career. He played in a couple. He won a couple. Yeah. I remember Ben Walter beat him in one, I think maybe at Trapper's Turn. But yeah, it'd be cool after all these years have passed for him to come back and try to win that elusive sixth, you know. And Dan Woltman could have won number five, but didn't play this year because he's out of golf right now, and he's in the working world, and he has a young family, a young child. So But it'd be cool to have Dan come back someday too. And I think there's that strong possibility that they will. But yeah, having Steve Stricker come back and play in a state open would be, that would be awesome.
Yeah, in fact, the last one that that Steve played in was 2000 at Stevens Point Country Club, where he beat Jim Schumann. He also won at Trapper's Turn in 98. I think it was the 98 one at Trapper's Turn. He came right from, was it Sahali up in Washington State, where he finished second to Vijay Singh at the PGA Championship. So it was very chaotic back at that point, but he was still winning state opens. And and I think, if I remember correctly, that yes, Ben Walter beat Steve Stricker in 97 at Cedar Creek, where
Cedar Creek.
Yeah, in Onalaska, where you know Steve could already have that sixth one, but and to kind of put a bow on last week's worldly travels here, getting to Palm Springs and having so many people. Tatum Beck was the first golfer that we went out to see, my wife and I, on Friday, and she asked, "How was the state open?" And it's just amazing, Gary. You know, we started this website to try to, you know, bring, you know, golf and under one, you know, coverage umbrella. And it just really amazes me how, you know, golfers in Wisconsin keep track of other golfers in Wisconsin. We saw it at the state open. I saw a lot of numbers being exchanged between, like, I want to say it was Andy Bugge, the 2015 runner up, and maybe Sam Anderson, you know, who spends a lot of time in Florida. But you know, it's all about connections, and I can tell that a lot of people are feeling that connection now, seeing Skip Kendall come back and play, seeing a lot of these guys, you know, that maybe haven't played in a while, Jordan Niebrugge, come back and play. I think it's the, you know, I think there's an appetite there for seeing, you know, more of guys like Steve Stricker, maybe a Jerry Kelly one day, come back and play in a state open, because they're really the guys who built the state open into what it is. And now they see all these great young players, and it's a great test and well worth the time that people put in to either try to qualify for it or to just come back and play if you're an exempt player.
Yeah. And Mark Wilson, I think, is maybe 46 years old.
Yeah.
And he's probably getting ready, you know, in a couple of years for Champions Tour. So maybe we'll see Mark come back and play in a state open or two as he gets ready to transition over. I'm sure he's going to play some on the Champions Tour, and he'll do well too. But it'd be cool to have him come back. Maybe he'll come back at Monopoly in a couple of years. We'll have Skip. Maybe Steve can talk Jerry into coming back, and we'll have the whole gang back at Monopoly in a couple of years.
I think you and I need to start carrying save the date cards for these guys.
Yeah.
So when we see them out on our travels, we can hand out, what the next couple of years look like on the state open front. So that would be
right.
Fun. That would right. be fun. Well, Talking.Golf's sponsored by Iron Jock and Wisconsin.Golf Shirts of Summer. Heat and humidity, the two constants of a Wisconsin summer, and Iron Jock tackles them both with their advanced performance gear, infusing pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. That technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. You can't find that in any other brand. So hop on over to ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com for more information. Gary, busy week ahead here for you. We pass the baton back to you. You've got coverage tomorrow of the U.S. Mid-Am qualifying, the second one in Wisconsin during this cycle leading up to the big championship at Erin Hills and at Blue Mountain Golf and Country Club in mid-September. What do you know about what you're going to face? It's at Hidden Glen tomorrow, and the Legends at Merrill Hills tomorrow, and any early line on maybe a favorite of a Wisconsin golfer to get through to Erin Hills?
Well, I see Jack Schultz is in the field, Rob, and I think you've pointed out in the past that Jack's qualified now for, I believe it's 4 U.S. amateurs, but it's not yet qualified for the U.S. mid-amateur. You'd think he'd have at least 1 or 2 in his back pocket by now. So, Jack, I'm sure, is really hyped up and super focused to try to get through that qualifier tomorrow and make it to Erin Hills. I think right in the middle of the tee times or toward the end, there's 2 or 3 foursomes that have, you know, some of our state's best players in them. There's a lot of names I don't recognize, obviously, from other states who are coming in to try to qualify, Rob.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, we're looking at Dallas, Texas. We're looking at Obviously a strong contingent from Illinois, Minnesota, and as far away as, I guess, Tennessee, Matt Ellison will be in the first pairing of the day. But towards the back end, in addition to Jack Schultz playing with Joe Weber and Nathan Colson, we've got in the group before his Nick Nelson, who did not play in the state open, did play, I believe, in the state amateur, and Corey Awney of Lake Geneva, in that group, both, very capable of getting through, have played well in these type of things before. And then Tom Halla, the Landon Cannon, Kevin Van Rossum, who's been, this will, I think, maybe be Kevin's only competitive golf this summer, because he's got, children who have golfing age, and they've done a lot as a family in terms of family trips around the country that you really only get one opportunity to do with kids that age. So neat to see Kevin in the field, along with Mike Belowski, who we got to see at the state open, played really well for a while. And it would be great to see, one of those guys, Travis Kronchinski, who played so well at the state amateur, he's in the field. Ricky Kuiper, Kevin Cahill, Jack McKinney, off of the state open as well. A lot of guys that could, represent Wisconsin. It'd be nice to see a little bit more representation. We haven't seen Wisconsin natives. Mark Scheibach, the former Badger, competing as we record the podcast out at a qualifier in Southern California. But it's going to be a large field at Erin Hills, Gary, and a lot of guys that you won't know at the start of the week, but you'll probably get to know by the end of the week, because if they can master Erin Hills and then the other qualifying round over at Blue Mound, they're going to be playing some pretty good golf.
Yeah, there's some quintessential mid-amateurs. It's so cool that that the USJ started this tournament, I think it's 40 or 41 years ago, because at that point and going forward increasingly, the U.S. amateur has been dominated by, college kids, 20, 22-year-old kids who are playing in a lot of tournaments, playing a lot of golf. And the true amateur, the guy who has a family and a career or a job, and plays on weekends, or doesn't get time to practice like those young kids, this is a tournament for them. And that 11:30 grouping, Rob, with Kevin Van Rossum, who is now spending a lot of time with his young kids playing golf, Bilo, Mike Belowski, who works for the MAC Fund and does a great job with the MAC Fund, but had a fine, still is very, very capable of lighting it up. And Tom Halla, the Landon Cannon, who manages a golf course in Agawaukee for Waukesha County. So these are true amateurs. They're, they have jobs, they have families, and it's, but they can still compete, and they haven't forgot what it's like to shoot low scores. So I love this. I love this tournament. It's really the true amateur championship in our country, basically.
And another name I just saw before that, John Sauer out of Appleton, T15 at the state amateur again this year after a top 20 finish last year at Westmore, bodes well for his chances. There's a lot of opportunity there. And then Jack Schultz, had a great first round out at the U.S. amateur, struggled in the second round, just barely missed the cut for the match play portion. The only golfer with Wisconsin ties to get through was Griffin Barella, the former Badger, who made it into the match play before falling. So there's a lot to look forward to there. What do you think about Merrill Hills as a course for that? What's it going to take, you think, Gary, for guys to get through?
It's going to take a straight driver of the ball, Rob. Merrill Hills is very tree lined. I know they've taken out some trees in recent years, but it's one of the more parkland type settings that these golfers will have faced. So you're going to have to drive the ball in the fairway. And of course, then it comes down to short game, as it always does in tournaments. But, that's why I like a guy named Jack. He, not only is he long, but he's fairly straight with his driver. So you're going to have to get the ball straight at Merrill Hills, Rob.
Gary, your other assignment tomorrow at Merrill Hills is to ask the WSGA folks, why are there so many WDs in these mid-am qualifiers? I've been posting before we got busy with the state open last week. I was trying to keep up with the other qualifiers from around the country. We've got 12 WDs in tomorrow's field at wow. One point, they pulled out after entering. And I'm amazed at that. And I know that, I think maybe to your point, real life gets in the way of going to qualifiers, but it's like this across the board, and maybe that's the difference between the men's mid-am and the women's. The women's just, because a number of them are run concurrently. We don't have a women's mid-am qualifier here in Wisconsin, but a number of them that do run it with the men's, simply because there might be maybe a dozen women playing for one or two spots. It's a great opportunity if you're 25 or older to be able to, you know, play in the USGA event. But there aren't many that are trying to qualify on the women's side. There are a lot that try to qualify on the men's side, but then there are also a lot who enter and then realize, oops, I've got to take the dog to the groomer that day or something.
Yeah, or they forgot to ask their boss for a couple days off to travel up to Wisconsin. Yeah, oops.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot, you know, a good portion of those WDs, Rob, are conflicts that the real life conflicts that they can't get out of. I'm sure that's part of it.
Well, I hope if those who qualify are able to make it to Erin Hills,
yeah,
and Blue Mountain, because boy, it'll be a treat. And again, part of a great run of USG events here in Wisconsin with the Senior Open up at Century World next year and the Women's U.S. Open in 2025 back at Erin Hills. So that'll be a good run here. And then, Gary, you'll be in the field. Folks, Gary D'Amato in the field of a WSGA event. It's the first WSGA putting championship on the big course at Geneva National. Gary D'Amato in the first pairing of the day on Thursday. You can watch him putt around with Joe Duchateau and Greg Thompson. And I don't know, you'll be hard pressed to match Joe Duchateau's cap game. What was that? Country Club. I can't remember what it was.
Misfits. Like that.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah. You're going to be, hopefully he'll have an appropriate hat for you. But all right. Tell me about the putting championship and A, what it's about, what possessed you to enter it, and what can we expect at Geneva National?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'll have my Wisconsin Bet golf hat on, Rob. So that's first of all. We got to get our hat straight. I entered it because there's nothing else in the state that I can compete in, Rob. I can't qualify for the state AM. I'll never play in a state open. But, you know, on a good day, hopefully I can putt better than my 11 handicap would suggest. And I'll have the hockey stick caliber solutions, hockey stick putter out, which probably will get a lot of funny looks. So I'm, you know, I just, I'm going to be nervous, Rob. I mean, it's only putting, but it's competition and I don't do much of it. So it's going to be fun. And my goal is to finish, somewhere in the top 15 or 20 would be my goal. So we'll see.
It's neat because much like the State Par 3 Championship a few weeks ago, you know, the shorter the course, I think the more open it is to anybody contending. And
you're being kind.
I'm being kind. I'm saying, Gary, there's a chance. What I'm saying is there's a chance. I could, you know, I'm looking maybe for a, you know, maybe not the big trophy, but, you know, maybe a second or third place plaque. We'll start small, win, place, or show. But what are you doing to prepare for this?
I live about 4 miles from Oakwood Park Golf Course, Rob, which is a fine Milwaukee County Parks facility. They have a great practice screen. I've seen a lot of good players out there this summer. I got in a putting contest with Jim Ignatowski out there one night. Wow. So yeah, I'll be going there every night and spending about an hour and a half working on my putting. So, but you know, win, place, or show, Rob, I just hope I place or show in my threesome. That's what I'm hoping for.
That's true. Well, and Joe Duchateau had a great state open, and
yeah,
not familiar with Greg Thompson, but you must be if he's from Racine.
Yeah, I definitely have heard the name. I think he's a pretty good player. If I remember right, seeing some of his scores and stuff, I think he plays in the tri course and the county open, things of that nature. So it's going to be fun. I'm glad I'm first off and don't have to sit around for an hour and a half and be nervous. So I'll get there a half hour early. And I'm not sure how we warm up. How do you warm up for a putting contest, Rob? Do they let you putt on the green? I don't think so.
No.
Maybe a certain part of it, maybe.
Right. No, or maybe the, so that's a putting course though at Geneva National, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think it's a 27 hole putting course. They used to have two big putting greens out there and they joined them. Craig Halton did the work on that and it opened earlier this year. They call it the dance floor at Geneva National. So looking forward to it.
Gary D'Amato on the dance floor Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Geneva National. We will not have Facebook Live coverage of that. We're going to let him do his thing in relative anonymity, and we'll wish you the best on that, Gary. We're hoping, all things willing, then, that we can talk about your experience on Friday. I don't know about you, but I haven't looked past today, so I don't know what my calendar looks like. But
yeah.
And I know you're zeroed in on Thursday, in addition to covering the Mid-Am qualifier. So, but two Talking Dot Golfs this week, at least that's the plan. We had to make up for just being too darn busy last week. But again, we count our blessings every week that we get to cover great golf. And on the men's side at the State Open last week at Ozaukee Country Club in Mequon, which, by the way, did a wonderful job hosting. It was great accommodations, and we had ourselves a wonderful time. And then, of course, the LPGA Tour Q School out in Rancho Mirage, where I was over the weekend to see, you know, the best of our women's golfers try to get to the next stage of LPGA Tour Q School. It was a fun week. And so with that, Gary, we'll call it a podcast, and we'll talk again on Friday.
All right, Rob, hopefully I have something good to say about my putting the day before. We'll see.
And if you win a trophy, we may have to do this do the video end of the Zoom call, so we can get the trophy in the foreground. But we'll one hole at a time, Gary. One hole at a time.
I wouldn't count on any kind of trophy, Rob. I'm just hoping I can get through it without embarrassing myself.
All right, we'll talk about it on Friday. For Gary, I'm Rob. This has been Talking.Golf, presented by Iron Jock in Wisconsin.Golf's Shirts of Summer. There are two constants of a Wisconsin summer: heat and humidity. Iron Jock tackles them both with its advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again later this week.